You know, this week I've been talking to you about the Apollo program and about my fascination with it. And I remain fascinated by it. And I know that some of you out there, you know what? Alex Jones is better than you because he knows that Stanley Kubrick shot the whole thing in his back on a back lot at Paramount. Okay, dude, whatever you say. Like I said, I'm not going to argue with anyone about this. I wish I still had my models of the Saturn V and the Lunar Excursion model and the CSM and the Gemini capsules and all that stuff. I was a NASA kid. I was a NASA punk, if you will. I want to explore the question, though, here, because we're 3 days away from Armstrong's famous walk on the moon here. But I want to pursue the question here of the of why we can't get back to the moon. Now, on Tuesday's show, I said, well, one of the main reasons we can't get back to the moon is, number one, we have to have men who are skilled enough to go there. Computers can only do so much. You actually need men that could pilot a spacecraft like that. And that's saying, look, that's saying a lot. The skill that Colonel Aldrin, the Commander Collins, and that Commander Armstrong had in just flying time, some of it combat flying time, being shot at and what have you, in close quarters, and they didn't have super jets that they were flying. Some instances they were what's the P series of planes? Single props and what have you. There were some amazing, amazing men. They really did have the right stuff. We talked about this the other day. You know, people are going to say you're an American exceptionalist now. Look, the United States has its share of problems. I talk about them all the time. It has problems. Most of them are man-made. We've created almost all of them. But that doesn't mean that we're totally incapable of good. It is possible that good things could happen. The good things have happened. Now, I was thinking about this. So you think that going to the moon sometime was justified? I think that communism, like eight popes called it, is an intrinsic evil. That's what I think, bozo. That's what I think, Alex Jones, boy. That's what I think. I think that communism remains evil, intrinsically evil. I think that there was a race to get to the moon. I think that the communists wanted to get there for nefarious, diabolical purposes, driven by Moloch himself. So, yeah, just you saying that it was a religious victory? No, I'm not saying it's a religious victory. It was a victory against communism. You know what else it made? You know what else it did? It made the communists spend money they didn't have. You have to remember, Soviet Russia was a command and control economy. They were blessed with a geography that produced massive natural resources. But the labor, you know, they had abortion policies. Look, the fact that the communists, Yakub was asking me earlier, what happened to the Russians? I said, well, I think they actually made it to the moon first. They crashed into it. Couldn't figure out how to actually land the thing that they built. So I said, I think they're dead Russians that are on the moon. Was it a good thing to deal communism that embarrassing blow? I think it was. Could it have been done another way? I don't know. I can tell you this. By the time Apollo 19... with Gene Cernan, which was the last, I think it was 19. Apollo 17. By the time Apollo 17 made the blasted off from Taurus Littrow in 1972 or 1973, you know, Gene Cernan gave that famous speech that, you know, we pledge that we'll come back here to Taurus Littrow and to the other parts of the moon, et cetera, et cetera. When Apollo 17 came back, and when the crew safely splashed down and the Apollo program was scrubbed, right? What was the national debt? What was the national debt? Mrs. O'Connell could probably pull a graph up and put it in the chat room at crusadechannel.com/chat.
You don't have to. I'm just saying the national debt in 1973 at the end of the Apollo program. What were the annual budget deficits? Were they running in the $900-800 billion? No. I mean, they were running some debt, but they weren't running the kind of debt. My point being that it beat the communists. It made the commies expend resources that they did not want to have to expend. It exacerbated or sped up the fall of communism in once Christian Russia, which is on its way back to being Christian again. God bless them. We should pray that the Russians are Christians and pray that we become allies. We should be allies with them, not enemies. They're allies, natural allies. But what was the debt? There wasn't any debt. And if there was, it was minuscule compared. It would be like putting it in a piggy bank compared to filling up both the World Trade Centers today. That's one thing. The second thing. So the national debt in 1973 at the end of the Apollo program was $458 billion. Now, that's the national credit card. That's the last year that Apollo flew, 1973. And you can see from 73 to 74, even if the Apollo program was kind of still going, 58 from 75 is 15 and 2. $17 billion was the budget deficit for the following year that was put on the credit card. $17 billion. The Apollo space program did not drive. My point is that we pretty much paid for it, okay? Congress figured out a way to pay for it. And then look, I only bring this up, not so we can have this discussion about debt and deficit. Who was the senator from Georgia? The deficit. We need to have us to talk about the deficit. Is that communism was driven closer to bankruptcy and closer to collapsing by the Apollo program. It's just a fact. There were serious setbacks for the Soviets at the time. So just think about that for a moment. So on Tuesday when I was talking about we don't have the manpower, we don't have the talented men to fly, and when we get into a little bit of what actually happened on Apollo 11 and some of the corrections, some of the things that they had to do, you'll understand what I'm talking about and why. But there's also the fact, like I was telling young Yakub today, I said, I watched a documentary, and then I looked it up, and I printed this out. I said, I think it took somewhere on the order of like 500,000 people to work on the Apollo project. I was close. Apollo's moon mission was one of the most expensive government initiatives in American history. During its peak years, some 34,000 NASA employees, that ain't gonna happen today, and some 375,000 outside contractors. Now, these guys weren't living in $900,000 McMansions in McLean, Virginia, mopping the floor with your and my blood generated by our livelihoods and the taxes they confiscated from us. This was not a military-industrial complex like the one we have today. As a matter of fact, one of the interesting things about watching the Apollo 13 movie directed by Ron Howard is when they talk about when Gene Kranz tells the flight control guys, he goes, I want to know every person that ever worked on that command service module. I want to know there's a guy that made a rivet that went into one of the doors. I want that guy. I want you to find that guy. I want you to interview the person that made and designed every switch on that spacecraft. You find me a way to get down to 18 volts, right? And Gary Sinise, Lieutenant Dan, plays an awesome part. He plays, who is he playing in Apollo 13? Lieutenant Dan. I can't remember the astronaut's name. He plays it really well. And then going there, we're going to run through this sequence again. We're going to run through it again. But the point is that I was telling Yakub earlier today, I said, dude, they would actually have to make a Saturn V. They'd have to make the molds for the parts and have to find the people to rivet it. They'd have to make the rocket parts. I mean, I don't even know if it's legal to make a Saturn V anymore. Oh, Ken Mattingly, astronaut Ken Mattingly. Thank you, Mrs. O'Connell. You're the best. I don't even know if it's legal. Are you allowed to use liquid oxygen or liquid hydrogen any longer?
No, this might, it might get into the environment. We can't do it.
Whatever. But they would have to go and they would have to, you'd have to manufacture all these, which now, of course, they could upgrade. They can upgrade much of the computer stuff. Obviously, they can upgrade some of the switching and all that. But you still have to make it. Like Yakub was saying, what if we have access to different kind of alloys and metals? Like, yeah, they could probably make it a lot lighter. But you wouldn't have to. My point would be like, look, you just make a Saturn V and fly the darn thing to the moon. Make a limb, make a CSM, fly it. You don't have those kind of men. And you'd have to have an army of 500,000 people. America does not do that kind of work anymore. We just don't. I'm sorry, we don't. It's not going to happen. Budget estimates vary. This is from history.com. But in 2008, the Congressional Research Service put Apollo's inflation-adjusted cost at $98 billion. Now, this is before unions. This is before military-industrial complex. The military-industrial complex spends $98 billion in 2 months. 2 months. No, well, no, wait, no, no. $780 billion. Let's call it $800 billion divided by 12. Hunk a letter. 80 million. This is about a month and a half. This is 40 days. 40 days worth of military-industrial complex spending today. Why? Because they wanted to go to the moon. They actually had a goal. They wanted to do something. What's not to like about that? And History.com does a great report on this. Several times more expensive than the Manhattan Project and the equivalent of almost $500 for every man, woman, and child living in the United States in 1969. So if you go, hey, we're going to have a lottery. Everybody has got to buy a ticket for $500. But that's going to be most of your tax bill for the year. And one of you gets to ride along with Buzz Aldrin to go to the moon. Okay, I'm in. Of course, there's a story of Apollo 1, which blew up on the launch pad. Actually, it didn't blow up. There was a serious design flaw in the CSM or in the CM, the command module, and they were bolted in. At that time, the way to get the astronauts in, what they were going to use for the moonshot capsule, where they put the door down and they screwed it down with bolts. And when the fire broke out inside, there was no way. They couldn't get to it. It was like 1,500 degrees. And so when they went in and retrieved the bodies of Virgil I, Gus Grissom, and the other guys, you can tell them I'm a bit of a NASA geek, there was nothing but ash. It was like they had gone and been cremated, basically. The crew of Apollo 7 won an Emmy Award. Did you know that? Apollo's first manned mission began in October 1968. When Apollo 7 entered low Earth orbit to conduct a shakedown of the command and service module. During the 11-day flight, astronauts Wally Schirra, I remember Wally Schirra, Don Isley, and Walter Cunningham made the first live television transmissions from inside a manned spacecraft. Billed as coming from the lovely Apollo room, high atop everything, the broadcast treated viewers to tours of the spacecraft, demonstrations of how meals were prepared in zero gravity, and plenty of wisecracks from the crew. The Wally, Walt, and Don show proved to be a massive hit. After returning home, the astronauts were given a special Emmy Award by the National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences. Now today they wouldn't be given an Emmy Award. They'd be given an Emmy condemnation. Did you have any black people up there in your capsule, Clark? Were there any women in the, and why were there no women included? Did you make any reparations for the space dust that you disturbed? We don't have people like that in this country anymore. Gerald Cellini was right. Americans don't fight, except here on the Crusade Channel, when we crusade on a mission. A bra company designed the Apollo spacesuits. When Neil Armstrong took his one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind in July 1969, he was wearing a spacesuit crafted by Playtex, company better known for making ladies' bras and girdles. The International Latex Corporation, the industrial division of Playtex, won a contract to build Apollo spaceships, spacesuits in 1962 and later sealed the deal after besting two other companies in a design competition. I didn't know this. It went on to create the A7L and A7LB, a pair of hand-sewn spacesuits that protected the Apollo astronauts from the elements while also giving them the freedom of movement. Playtex's spacesuit division split off from the main company in 1967 and continues to serve NASA as a contractor under the name ILC Dover. A-N-G-E-R. Angers. I was mentioning this one of the days on the trip. When you see there's a four-hour gap in the coverage there of... Because we're live. Paris time. I mean, it's Paris time. So it's a seven-hour difference here, Central Time. It's a six-hour difference, Eastern Time. So we'll be broadcasting live 3 a.m. for those of you on the East Coast, Monday morning. Now, some of you probably are up at 3 a.m. and doing the early shift going to work, because many of you used to listen to me when I was on at 5 a.m. Well, that was Central Time, so 6. In any event, we'll be broadcasting live all day. The conferences are all day, 5 days this week. Again, there is the one road trip to the Tapestry of Angers, at Angers. I'm bringing the camera. I'm bringing the codec. I'm bringing my microphones. Joseph Pierce is bringing himself. We'll have Joseph Pierce. Charles Coulombe. Charles bringing himself. There are other great speakers. There's priests that are going to speak. I'll be interviewing. There's two world-class historians. One of them is interviewed in the movie Hidden Rebellion, all about the real story of the Vendée, written and directed by Daniel Robidon. You can get a copy of that movie in the Founders Trading Post while you're getting your 50% discounted and becoming a co-sponsor of my mission to Chavanya to bring this conference back to you about the Anointed Imagination. We put 80 spots up, which would just about cover our expenses. And then it's still for sale. And I hope we sell thousands after the fact. But it won't be for the $50. So while you can still get one at the discount, and that will expire either Sunday, right before the conference begins, or when we get to 80. So here's what you do. Go to MikeChurch.com/shop, and you can get a copy of Hidden Rebellion on DVD. We've got great specials and deals all over the Founders Trading Post. You know, Mrs. O'Connell put 18 rosaries and chaplets in the store the other day. Handmade, some of the most beautiful work she's ever done. Check out the work of the Little Bayou Rosary in the Catholic Corner. You know, you people that haven't shopped the Catholic Corner, you don't... I mean, there's Catholic stuff in there, but there's cool stuff in there, too. check it out today. Maybe by the before we even get to across the ocean, we get to our 80 co-sponsors of the conference at the discounted rate. Again, MikeChurch.com/shop. Okay. There's so much to talk about here. I want to go back to the Apollo mission, though, because we've been talking about it all week, Apollo 11. I got a text message from a dear friend of mine reminding me, Mike, this is probably the last time a nation of people can ever commit to so monumental a task and actually accomplish it. I mean, it truly is amazing. You know, you people know me. You've been listening to me, many of you, for two decades. You know I'm not a USA, I'm not an American exceptionalist. However, there are exceptional Americans. And yes, there have been things that the United States has done that was exceptional and is exceptional. One of them was the Apollo program. And like my buddy was reminding me in the text message, Mike, this technology to do what they did didn't exist. They had to make it. They had to invent it. Like I was telling young Yakub earlier today, you look at that Saturn V thing. That thing is 380 some odd feet. The parachute gantry at the top of it tops out at like 395 feet. That's a 40-story building. That's one shell square in downtown New Orleans. Biggest building in downtown New Orleans. And it flew. It didn't just fly. It flew to the moon. So I was telling you a little bit about the Apollo 11 shot and giving some trivia. With the last thing was the spacesuits were made by Playtex Living Bra. By the by, who was the spokesbabe for the Playtex Bra Company around the time of Apollo? Your time starts now, Roger. Best of luck. More trivia. Apollo 12 was struck by lightning twice during takeoff. Apollo's second lunar landing mission took off on November the 14th, 1969. During a brief lull in a thunderstorm, all went according to plan at first, but just 36 seconds after liftoff, the spacecraft and its roaring Saturn V rocket suffered a lightning strike. Moments later, a second bolt of lightning tore through the ship and wiped out many of its electrical systems. Inside the cockpit, Apollo 12 astronauts Pete Conrad, Alan Bean, and Richard Gordon heard the master alarm and saw their instrument panel glow with warning lights. NASA considered aborting the mission, but a young flight controller remembered a method for switching the spacecraft's signal conditioning equipment to an auxiliary setting, which allowed the crew to reconnect the ship's fuel cells and bring its navigation platform back online once in orbit. Despite beginning its mission with a near disaster, Apollo 12 went on to make a successful moon landing. So that's twice now. NASA quarantined astronauts after the first few moon missions, number 9 and number 10. Apollo 15's crew left a work of art on the moon. By the time Apollo 17 ended in 1972, and again, I told you, $90 billion was the cost of the entire Apollo program. Six different lunar expeditions had left the moon's surface littered with everything from discarded spacecraft parts to scientific experiments and even a photo of astronaut Charlie Duke's family. Still, the most unusual relic might be Fallen Astronaut, an aluminum sculpture designed by Belgian artist Paul van Hooijdonk and secretly left on the moon. Secretly? What do you mean secretly? He was all the time, he was secretly Mexican. Secretly left on the moon in August 1971 by Apollo 15 commander David Scott. Scott believed that the minimalist artwork should serve as a memorial to those in it had died in the pursuit of space exploration. So he placed it alongside a plaque inscribed with the names of 14 lost astronauts and Soviet cosmonauts. Here's a little clip here of what it sounded like back in 1969.
Okay. At the foot of the ladder, the Lambert beds are only depressed in the surface about 1 or 2 inches, although the surface appears to be very, very fine-grained as you get close to it. It's almost like a powder. Ground mass is very fine. Yep, and then a long one.
Okay, I'm going to leave that 1 foot up there and both hands down about the fourth rung up.
There you go.
Okay, now I think I'll do the same.
He's standing on the landing pod, that big circular disc now.
For those who haven't read the plaque, we'll read the plaque that's on the front landing gear of this LAM. There's two hemispheres, one showing each of the two hemispheres of Earth. Underneath it says, "Dear men from the planet Earth, first set foot upon the moon, July 1969 AD. We came in deep."
I guess you're about the only person around that doesn't have TV coverage of the scene.
That's all right, I don't mind a bit. How is the quality of the TV?
Oh, it's beautiful, Mike. It really is.
Oh, geez, that's great. Is the lighting halfway decent?
Yes, indeed. They've got the flag up now, and you can see the stars and stripes on the...
And they were putting the flag up. There's hours and hours and hours of this stuff. I want to go back to just a part of the mission, though, that I was talking about yesterday. Not only do you have to have a 500,000 people, and you got to make all these parts and recreate a Saturn V rocket, but if you're going to go to the moon... You're also going to have the flight savvy and the ability to do what Armstrong, Collins, and Colonel Buzz Aldrin did. Now, listen to this. I've been going down this description every day this week and reading you parts of it. So I'm not going to be here tomorrow. And I believe that the actual EVA, extra vehicle activity, that the actual moon, the stepping onto the moon, today's what? Today's the 18th? I believe it's the 21st. I want to say it's the 21st. So that would be Sunday. And if it is, well, I'll be recording Mike Church. It'll be 11 p.m. here Sunday night, Central Time. It'll be 6 o'clock in the morning in Chevania. But I'll make mention of it. I'll probably play that. One ball step for a man, one giant leap for mankind. Okay. So yesterday I left you with the fact that the Apollo, that Armstrong and Aldrin had maneuvered the LEM, L-E-M, Lunar Excursion Module, into an elliptical orbit, and they were about to make it circular. The flight plan called for the first EVA to begin after a four-hour period of rest, but when it was advanced to begin as soon as possible. Let's see here. The descent engine continued to provide braking thrust until about 102 hours, 45 minutes into the mission. Partially piloted manually by Armstrong, the Eagle landed in the Sea of Tranquility in Site 2 at 0 degrees, 41 minutes, 15 seconds north latitude there, and 23 degrees, 25 minutes east longitude. This is about 4 miles downrange from the predicted touchdown point and occurred almost 1.5 minutes earlier than scheduled. And now, this is what I said earlier. You know, the cosmonauts crashed their moon. They crashed. They tried to do this. They couldn't do it. And as I said, to my knowledge, there are the skeletons or skeletal remains of Russians on a moon. So either that or in lunar orbit, one of the two. But they are most certainly there and were left there. When Armstrong and Aldrin were on the way down from a high lunar orbit down to try and land this thing on the surface, all they had were the best Newtonian guesstimates that they could have on the weight of the thing and how fast it was flying, how they could slow it down. How it would react to the low gravity, how the engine would work, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You got to remember, there's no place here on Earth where you can actually try out a lunar excursion module and fly the thing. You know, the moon does have some, there is some gravity to it. But so in any event, just thinking out loud about this. When they're flying this thing down to the surface, if you read the transcript, I read the whole transcript. And it's a good 3.5-4 pages long. If you read the transcript of what went on during the descent, it is clear that the plans that were made in mission control and that were drawn up for the astronauts to follow the land for Neil Armstrong. Now you got to remember that it was Aldrin who actually was supposed to be flying this thing, but Armstrong took over. And Aldrin actually said, "You should fly." And so Armstrong actually flew the thing down. And the flight plan that they had designed at NASA didn't work. They were on the way down, and it came to a point, hey, man, these numbers are wrong. Do we abort? And they actually considered whether or not they should abort or not. Of course, they ultimately decided, no, we got this. We got this. Got this on lockdown, bro. And so they went ahead with the landing, but he flew that thing down. That was not done by computer. That was Neil Armstrong flew that thing. You know, he was using, if you look at a picture, because people like him pictures, look at a picture of a LEM. There are these thruster things. They look like loudspeaker cones that stick out on either side, on four sides, the lunar excursion module. And there's four cones on each one. There's an up, a down, a left, and a right, north, south, east, west. That's basically, and there's the main engines are on the bottom, but that's basically the main way of controlling the thing is to use the aft and the port and the starboard, aft and whatever is the opposite of aft, aft and forward thrusters there. But my point being that this wasn't just some routine. Well, just put it, Mr. Armstrong, play. Just put it on autopilot and land it. He couldn't put it on autopilot. It didn't work. The maneuvers included a powered descent that ran a mere nominal 40 seconds longer than pre-flight planning due to translation maneuvers to avoid a crater during the final phase of landing. Attached to the descent stage was a commemorative plaque signed by President Nixon and the three astronauts. Now, again, they were going to hit the rim of this crater, okay? If he doesn't take this evasive action, they crash into the rim of this ginormous 700-foot-tall, however tall it was, crater. He had to fly. In other words, he had to fly over it. And to do that, he had to maneuver. It's incredible. The flight plan called for the first EVA to begin after a four-hour rest period, but it was advanced to begin as soon as possible. Nonetheless, it was almost 4 hours later that Armstrong emerged from the Eagle and deployed the TV camera for the transmission of the event to Earth. At about 109 hours, 42 minutes after launch, Armstrong stepped on to the moon. Let me give it a little applause here. Yeah. About 20 minutes later, Colonel Aldrin followed him. The camera was then positioned on a tripod about 30 feet from the lunar module. Half an hour later, President Nixon spoke by telephone link with the astronauts. Commemorative medallions bearing the names of the three Apollo 1 astronauts who lost their lives in a launch pad fire and two cosmonauts who also died in accidents were left on the moon's surface. A 1.5-inch silicon disc containing micro-miniaturized goodwill messages from 73 countries and the names of congressional and NASA leaders also stayed behind. During the EVA, in which they both ranged up to 300 feet from the Eagle, Aldrin deployed the Early Apollo Scientific Experiments Package, or EASEP, and Armstrong and Aldrin gathered and verbally reported on the lunar surface samples. After Aldrin had spent 1 hour, 33 minutes on the surface, he re-entered the LM, followed 41 minutes later by Armstrong. The entire EVA phase lasted more than 2 hours and 2.5 hours, ending at 111 hours, 39 minutes into the mission. Armstrong and Aldrin spent 21 hours, 36 minutes on the moon's surface. After a rest period that included 7 hours of sleep, the ascent stage engine fired at a... Now, listen to this again. Oh, they just put it on auto. Their charge plays. It didn't happen anyway. Stanley Kubrick made it up. Okay. Did Stanley Kubrick make up all this? The ascent stage engine fired at 124 hours, 22 minutes. It was shut down 435 seconds later when the Eagle reached an initial orbit of 11 by 55 miles above the moon. And when Columbia was on its 25th revolution, as the ascent stage reached Apollon at 125 hours, 19 minutes, the reaction control system, or RCS, fired so as to nearly circularize the Eagle orbit at about 56 miles, some 13 miles below and slightly behind Columbia. Subsequent firings of the LM-RCS changed the orbit to 57 by 72 miles. Docking with Columbia occurred on the CSM's 27th revolution at 128 hours, 3 minutes into the mission. Armstrong and Aldrin returned to the CSM with Collins. 4 hours later, the LM jettisoned and remained in lunar orbit. And then trans-Earth injection of the CSM began July 21st as the SPS fired for 2.5 minutes when Columbia was behind the moon in its 59th hour of lunar orbit. Following this, the astronauts slept for about 10 hours, and then there's more on what happened. Reentry was initiated on July the 24th, 44 hours after leaving lunar orbit. The service module separated from the command module, which was reoriented to a heat shield forward position. Parachute deployment occurred at 195 hours and 13 minutes. After a flight of 195 hours, 18 minutes, and 35 seconds, about 36 minutes longer than planned, Apollo 11 splashed down in the Pacific Ocean, 13 miles from the recovery ship, the USS Hornet. Because of bad weather in the target area, the landing point was changed by about 250 miles. Apollo 11 landed 13 degrees, 19 minutes north, and 169 degrees, 9 minutes west latitude on July the 24th, 1969. Now, isn't that the most incredible? I mean, Homer's Odyssey got nothing on Aldrin, Collins, and Armstrong's Odyssey. Some of the pre-launch milestones. Listen to this. I'm catching you up on the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 landing on the moon, and of course the walk on the moon of Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin. In 1968, November 6, 1968, LM-5 integrated systems test. December the 6th, 68, the CSM, its command service module, 107 integrated systems test. I mean, you got all these tests that are going on. 129, 69, command and service module are mated. February the 6th, 69, S2 on dock at Kennedy. That's stage two. 220, stage IC on dock at Kennedy. Combined CSM 107 system test. There's all this stuff going on. 626, 69, countdown demonstration test. And then they launched on July the 2nd, Saturn V, AS 506. And again, they had to drive this thing 3 miles on this ginormous coaster that carried it out. It is nothing short of incredible. And no, it couldn't be done today. One, we don't have the men capable of doing it. Two, you don't have the manpower. And we fritter away so much wasted money on the military-industrial complex, the environmental-industrial complex, the education-industrial, the government-industrial, you name the health-industrial complex, you name the waste that the federales have become experts in pulling off. No, you couldn't do it again. And that's why we haven't done it. People are saying, no, we can do it again. It's a matter of this. And no, it's not a matter of that. You need a 500,000 people. It's not going to happen. There's a that's a nice graphic, Mrs. O'Connell, in the chat room at crusadechannel.com/chat. That's another nice picture of the limb. And now look at that thing. You can tell that they made that thing. They welded that joker together. Look at it. That thing is all put together. It's made out of parts. All right. Mike Church Show here on the Crusade Channel, the last live radio station standing.